I'm Denise Morris, your host this morning. I will be reading from Richard Ayscough's Brexit and the New Global Rebellion. That's posted on commondreams.org, and he offers a bit of a cautious optimism on last week's vote in Britain to leave the European Union. I will be reading a slightly abridged version of the article, but it's quite insightful, I think. Things are changing. A major crack has appeared in the edifice of globalization and the neoliberal order that has dominated the world's economy since the end of World War II, and it's now in danger. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but poisonous weeds are just as likely as green shoots to grow up through those cracks. We now know that Great Britain, itself an amalgam of older nations, is divided. England and Wales voted to leave Europe, while Scotland, Northern Ireland, and ethnically diverse London voted to remain. This vote was a stunning rejection of Great Britain's political establishment. Leave prevailed despite opposition from all three major political parties. Prime Minister David Cameron, who will now step down, called on voters to remain. So did Jeremy Corbyn, the most left-wing Labour leader in a generation. Barack Obama crossed the Atlantic to stand beside Cameron and offer his support. Voters rejected all of them. The uprising has begun. The question now is, who will lead it going forward? The world's financial and political elites must now face the fact that resistance to their economic order, which has shaped the world since the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944, is a major phenomenon. These elites are apparently more out of touch with the citizens of the industrialized world than at any time in modern memory. Make no mistake, the Leave vote was a rejection of globalization, at least as it's currently structured. This was a revolt of working-class Britons who have seen their post-war prosperity erode around them and their social contract eviscerated by the corporate and financial oligarchy. But it was also the sign of a darker and more sinister worldwide phenomenon, the resurgence of global nativism and xenophobia. This worldwide turn towards fear of the other is globalization's shadow self. That's not to say that there wasn't a legitimate left-wing case to be made for leaving the European Union. The Left Leave movement, or Lexit, had its own advocates. But this near victory wasn't won with left arguments about resisting the global oligarchy. The left was too divided to make that case clearly or forcefully. It was largely won by stirring up bigotry against immigrants, cloaked in flimsy arguments about excessive regulation. Legitimate economic grievances were channeled into nationalist hostility. Many Leave voters felt powerless, that they no longer had much of a say in their own destinies. They weren't wrong. The European Union was largely a creation of transnational financial forces, driven by a self-serving neoliberal ideology of free markets, privatization, and corporate economic governance. But even at its worst, the EU is a symptom and not a cause. Great Britain's citizens haven't been losing control over their fate to the EU. They've been losing it because their own country's leaders, as well as those of most other Western democracies, are increasingly enthralled to corporate and financial interests. The British people have lost more sovereignty to trade deals like NAFTA and the TPP than they could ever surrender to the European Union. Their democratic rights are trampled daily, not by faceless EU bureaucrats, but by the powerful financial interests that dominate their politics and their economy. This vote won't help the middle class. British workers will no longer be guaranteed the worker rights that come with EU membership. British corporations will be less regulated, which means more environmental damage and more mistreatment of employees and customers. They will not, in other words, in the words of William Blake, quote, build Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. Most Leave voters probably don't know that because the media failed them. Instead of being given a balanced understanding of EU membership's advantages and disadvantages, the British people were fed a constant diet of terror fears and trivial anti-government anecdotes meant to reinforce the notion that EU was needlessly and absurdly bureaucratic. Like Trump, the media, they used the economic fears to stoke the anti-immigrant fear and hatred that is their real stock in trade. Their slogan might just as well have been, Make England Great Again. The campaign's fear-mongering and hate has already claimed a victim in Joe Cox, the Labour MP who was violently martyred by a white British racist. Tellingly, her murder was not described as an act of terrorism, which it clearly was. The decision to restrict the terrorist label to Muslims in Great Britain, as in the United States, feeds precisely the kind of hatred that fuels movements like these. Great Britain's immigrant population grew by 4.5 million under EU membership, but in a just economy, that would lead to growth for the existing middle class. Britain's immigrants didn't wound that country's middle class. They're scapegoats for rising inequality and the punishing austerity of the conservative regime. So what happens next? Markets are already reacting in anticipation of the new trade barriers and political uncertainty. Before the voting, estimates of leave votes' effect on Britain's economy range from negative to outright calamitous. The outcome will probably fall somewhere in between. But who will lead it? Where do we go? The global financial order is fracturing, but will it fall? It's powerful and well-organized. Even if it does, what will replace it? A more humane global order or a world torn by nationalism and hate? Should these new parties and factions form a transnational movement? The Greeks chose economic autonomy when they voted for Syriza. They didn't get it. The British aren't likely to get what they want from this vote either. No matter what happens, British citizens will still be enthralled to corporate financial forces, forces that can rewrite the rules as they go along. Greece's fate has been a cautionary tale for the world, a powerful illustration of the need for worldwide coordinated resistance to today's economic and political elites. We can vote, but without economic autonomy, we aren't truly free. In the months and years to come, the people of Great Britain are likely to learn the truth. We are all Greece. The question is, what do we do now? That is Richard Iskow's article from commondreams.org, Brexit and the New Global Rebellion. You can see the whole article posted on commondreams.org.